Hey everybody, how you doing? Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and geez Louise, what a week. Oh my gosh, okay, what have I been up to since the last time we talked? Well, I went to Arizona. That was a lot of fun, because the Packers, cheapers cripes, they beat the Cardinals, the undefeated, formerly undefeated Cardinals. Now they are very defeated. And I'm going to be honest with you, I was actually in the airport. I had a show the next day. So long story short, I had to fly back when the Packers were playing the Cardinals. I didn't get to go to the game. I really wanted to. And what a miss, too. Because I was in the airport. And I was sitting there watching the game at the bar. And by the way, the Denver airport where I had my transfer, it might as well have been the Milwaukee airport or the Green Bay airport, because they're at least in this bar section. Wisconsin took over the Denver airport bar during this Packers-Arizona game. And the Packers, if you watch the game, it wasn't looking good in the fourth quarter, the end of the fourth quarter. The Cardinals were threatening to score. It was no good. You know, our defense had done a great job in the game, but you know, red zone, it's always tough. Anyway, I didn't even see that interception like when it happened. I didn't believe it. It took me like five replays to believe that it actually happened, and then it happened. But the eruption, there was like this silence because nobody knew exactly what happened, and then just this eruption in the Denver airport. You know, it got TSA coming over to check out exactly what was going on. So I just want to give props to all the Packers fans out there in the Denver airport holding it down on Thursday night. So, and by the way, thanks to everybody who came out to the show in Arizona. We had two sold out shows, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, it's one thing to, I think, sell a show in Wisconsin. But, you know, when you leave Wisconsin, although, you know what, I'm just going to say this, much like that Denver airport, Arizona also is basically Wisconsin. I mean, they got a Culver's out there. You know, there's a lot of snowbirds out there. There's a lot of people who went out there for spring training and then just never left. So there's a lot of Wisconsinites in Arizona. But I had a great time. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. Also, Menominee was a lot of fun. Did a show in Menominee. That's what I was traveling back for on Friday night. And, this was a fun thing from that show. So there was this police officer there's a police officer at our first show there, and I got an email a while back. Now, it may or may not be true that I got a bit of a lead foot, you know? Sometimes I can speed. It's not that I really like speeding, it's just that I don't like paying attention to how fast I'm going. And that was happening a couple years ago as I was going up to my buddy's wedding. I was going through Eau Claire. And if you've driven on 90, 94 through Eau Claire, you know that they've got like all these forests. And then in between the forests, there's this little strip of concrete where the police like to hang out and catch jackasses like me going a little bit over the speed limit. Anyway, I got a message that the police officer who pulled me over and had no idea who I was going to be at the show. He then, after he gave me a ticket, his buddies told them who he gave a ticket to. And he was like, who? And then they show him videos and he's like, I still don't get it. So whatever. Anyway, he came to the show and I brought him up on stage and I interrogated him on stage about what it was about me that he thought it would be good to pull me over. And his answer was pretty simple. You know, you were speeding. And then what else happened? Oh, I did a film. Of which I don't think I can, you know, when it's annoying when people say, oh, I'm doing this thing and I can't give you any details, but I don't think I'm supposed to give any details of the thing I'm doing. But I did a film over the weekend where I had a role and I had to find emotions, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, there was a scene where I had to cry, create tears, moisture in my eye area. And quite frankly, for a guy who doesn't really have emotions, or, you know, has to like find the shovel in my soul and then, you know, just keep digging and digging, still no emotions. So anyway, I had to figure out a way to cry. What did you think of? I'll tell you what I thought of. And honestly, here come the emotions are about to flood back in. The year was 2019. I was down in Chicago for the Packers-Bears game, and I couldn't get tickets to the game because I didn't have a lot of money. And I walked into this bar to watch the game with a bunch of Bears fans. And what happened was the Packers lost. And I thought about that moment. But that's not the part where I cried. I was walking back home after the Packers lost, and I decided I needed to reflect. And so I went to the Bean, and I looked at myself, and I just thought about the game. And then that was the last time I remember crying. And so I just thought about that, and it worked. I was able to muster up some tears. Real good, Charlie. Hey, what's the podcast on today, Charlie, since we're like 10 minutes into it and you haven't said? Well, we have a few very special guests, three guests, actually. It's two interviews, though. First, we got Mad Dog and Merrill. If you don't know Mad Dog and Merrill, they're great. They've been doing cooking shows in the Midwest for 40 years. They do live shows. They have comedic backgrounds, and they're just a lot of fun, and they're really informative if you're interested in cooking. I also have on Alex Ocray, who works for Ocray Family Farms, where we recently did a potato video, first-time potato grower. And the theme of this podcast is really, you know, potatoes in Wisconsin. A lot of people don't think about Wisconsin and potatoes, but it's one of the main growers of potatoes in the United States. And Mad Dog and Merrill talk about, you know, various potato recipes and everything like that. But, you know, we dive a little deeper into sort of what it means to be a potato grower from an economic perspective, but also an environmental perspective. You know, one of the big pushbacks, I think, on really any sort of agriculture, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, but any sort of agriculture, there's going to be certain environmental aspects that are not perfect. And so we address those and we talk about those, but also what are they actively doing to make potatoes better? Because I think all of us are eating fries, you know, or most of us, or potato salad or something, you know, potato pancakes at the fish fry, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, it's not, it doesn't, shouldn't just fall on, you know, the farmers necessarily to take responsibility for all the environmental implications of potato growing, but it's not just potatoes. It's dairy has its own set of environmental implications. Cranberries, everything we really do to the environment, building a house on, has implications. The nice thing I think about what Alex was talking about is they do seem to be actively looking at, hey, how can we best grow potatoes in this environment? You know, the soil is set up that it can work well. But, you know, anytime you do it, you got to apply pesticides and all that. But so anyway, we had a great conversation on how can you grow potatoes in the most environmentally friendly way possible. It's still not a perfect system. But I think the nice thing about talking about it is, and then you, all of you listening to the conversation, some of you might, you know, get your own brains going around this is, hey, maybe I can think of a way to help mitigate this problem or that problem. But again, I think the most reassuring thing is that there's that desire, really, that I've found across the whole egg industry to try and make this the most environmentally viable thing to do. Because at the end of the day, if the environment goes, so does the egg. So I think there's a lot to enjoy in this conversation. What else do we want to address here? Oh, yeah, we've got the Midwest Survival Guide, ladies and gentlemen. So many great comments came in about people buying the book, and I cannot thank you enough for doing that. I'm hoping, I guess the reason we're pushing all these pre-orders is like if you get enough pre-orders, then you can possibly get on the New York Times bestseller list, which just gives your book more opportunity to get farther and farther out there. So that's what we're really pushing for. So I want to thank all of you for getting the book and supporting in that way. And what I like the most about this book, honestly, is that it's a collective effort. It's not just my perspective on the Midwest, but I really tried to reach out to many different groups of people and collaborate with them in creating this book. So I think you'll really enjoy that this is not just, you know, one dude's idea of what the Midwest is. It's a lot of people. And I also incorporated a lot of the comments all of you have sent me over the years. It's actually like the original idea for this book came from a few people who said, you know, we're moving to the Midwest. My daughter's getting married. And we want to be closer to the grandkids. What can you tell us about the Midwest? You know, I got a bunch of different comments like that, or people saying, I'm going to college in the Midwest for the first time. You need to do like a book, a how-to. So we did it, the Midwest Survival Guide, coming out not next week, but the week after. November 16th, I believe, is the release day. So again, any pre-orders you want to do before that, cheapers cripes, that would be real slick. Arky dokes. And let's see here. Oh, make sure you follow Cripescast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you want to see me on the road, I'll be doing shows in Manitowoc, Whitewater's coming up this week, Marshfield. Some of these may be sold out, but I think there are still some tickets available. Green Bay, doing the Rush Center. That's my first ever arena show, which is just crazy to even say. That's what I'm doing. But, oh, that's my phone going off. Ignore that. Sorry, Brother John. Apologies. Just ignored his call. Oh, well, I'll call him back. Now I got that guilt coming up. Oh, jeez, Louise. So Green Bay still got some tickets left, but not many, because we're actually close to selling that out. And I cannot thank all of you enough for getting us to that point. Any other fun things? Oh, yeah. I just did some fly fishing yesterday with me and my dad, my brother, my cousin Tom. We went out to the Menominee River in Wauwatosa, actually. Did some fly fishing. What'd you catch, Charlie? Didn't catch anything, but it was still fun to, you know, it, like fly fishing, the nice thing is, like, you know, worst case scenario, you're going on a walk through a river. So it's kind of fun like that. My dad got a couple little suckers, little sucker minnows, basically. I forget the exact term of that fish, but, you know, they're little. They basically look like minnows. But saw a huge salmon going through there. I'm not going to tell you what spot, okay? Because, you know, I'm a selfish fisher like that. But, you know, Menominee River, they got salmon in there right now. Saw a bunch of dead ones. That's a sad thing. You know, those salmons go up the river to lay their eggs, and then they're going there to face their own demise. You know, they're not going back down the river. You know, that's where the phrase comes from. You know, he's going up the river. Is that a phrase for someone dying? I don't really know, Charlie. Let's get to the Cripescast. And folks, I want to let you know that this podcast would not be possible without the amazing folks over there at Jolly Good Soda. Jolly Good has been a proud partner. Are they proud? I hope they're still proud. They've been our proud partner. I'll just say proud. Why not? For the past year and a half or so, they've been very supportive of the podcast. Really great about sharing it. Make sure you follow them at Jolly Good Soda. Go, if you're looking to get Jolly Good outside of Wisconsin, just go to jollygoodsoda.com. You can order soda or merch. If you're in Wisconsin, you go to any grocery store, they should have it. If they don't, you know, knock on the manager's door and say, hey, where in the hell is Jolly Good? Honest to Pete, how am I supposed to make my brandy old-fashioned sour without Jolly Good Sour Power? And then I think he'll put it on his list and all that sort of stuff. So, okie dokes, let's get to my conversation with Mad Dog and Merrill and Alex Okray. I always appreciate a nice Hawaiian shirt duo, you know, too, and which I'm sure, you know, you get off.
Plus, we're powered by Wisconsin potatoes today.
I was wondering why your shirt was unbuttoned and now
layered,
it all makes sense.
It's called the layered look.
Right.
The
layered look. I was going to show you mine. Mine's a tattoo, but I don't want to embarrass
you. No, don't do it.
I'd actually love to see what tattoo you got going on under there.
Wow. Well, nah,
it's an anchor.
Oh, it's an anchor. Okay. What does the anchor symbolize?
Love and charity.
Love and charity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's a sinking ship and we've been on it for 40 years.
Right.
Where did you guys meet?
Oh, you're ready. We're actually cousins by marriage.
There, you gave it away.
There.
That's it. That's the deal.
Yeah.
Where they got us at funerals, weddings, and reunions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what year was it?
40 years ago. Yeah. 81.
Yeah, something like that.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Could be 41 years.
Yeah. Ago. We worked for a grill company. Actually, we both did demos for Weber Grills and then started doing local, you know, radio and television, and then got on national and then sort of grew from there. So,
yeah. And so that's quite the partnership. Did you know it was going to be this long when you started, or was it like, you know, try one thing?
We call it purgatory now.
Okay, purgatory. That's more appropriate word, I think.
Yeah. So it's kind of like indefinite. We're not really sure when it's going to end, but 40 years is good so far.
Yeah.
Well, if you're doing what you like you're doing, You know, it's a great job.
Right. No, you can't at all. I mean, and purgatory has a negative connotation sometimes, but what people don't always remember is it's not hell, you know?
That's better than the alternative. That's exactly right.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm glad I could.
You cheered me up today, Charlie. I told you it wasn't so bad.
All right. Okay. That's great.
Like, what I'm most interested in is you guys kind of have like your pathway to, you know, being entertainers is not like your traditional one. So how do you get to the point where you are today from, you know, working with Weber and all that sort of stuff?
Well, what's interesting is that, number one, we enjoy what we're doing, you know, and we had ups and downs like everybody else does in the complete business. And we stuck with it. You know, I mean, we knew it was there and we weren't going to give up, you know, and we didn't. And we stuck with it. You know, the television show's doing very well. We worked with different organizations. The hot item, though, back in the early 80s, is that we did the Home and Garden Show circuit. And at that time, there wasn't a whole bunch of Home and Garden Shows like there were now. So we got in the market and were very successful. And, you know, the big thing is that we've never missed a date yet. You know,
40 years, we've never missed a day. We've never been sick in 40 years. Yeah. You know, the show business routine, you know, it's like Willie Nelson. The man's, you know, 80-some years old, 85, 86 years old.
Right.
Once you get up on stage and once you do performances, it's in your blood, it's in your heart, and you don't quit.
Yeah.
You know, you get a second job. Well, why should I do that? I'm having fun and it's okay, you know?
Plus, I'd get fired if I worked someplace else. Oh.
Hired.
They wouldn't hire me for one of them.
Well, yeah, there is that thing too. If you enjoy it that much, you don't want to miss a day. And everybody knows that's a big reason you miss the work, that miss work when you don't want to, you know, if you're calling in sick, it's that, you know, if you, unless you're actually sick, but you know, that most people usually aren't. Yeah. What is the thing that brings you? Is it the entertainment portion? Is it the food portion? What really is that main motor that drives you both? And could, I know it could be different for the both of you. So.
Well, I think on both. I think it's entertainment. And I mean, really, we're expert grillers, too, you know. So, I mean, we're able to entertain. Really? But, I mean, we really know what we're talking about. We've been doing it for 40 years. So I think the entertainment definitely is. That's an adrenaline rush for it.
We just have fun. We tell people to sit back, relax. There's a group in Wisconsin called the Wisconsin Barbecue Posse. Nice group of guys. They got involved with smoking. And the head guy, Tim, you know, he thanks us every day that he does his cooking routines because he watched us over the years do outdoor cooking and create different ideas. And because of that, he became an enthusiast. And we have kids coming up to us all the time saying, geez, you know, I'm going to chef school because of you guys. And we said, you poor sap. sorry. Yeah, we're really sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool part about doing it and being on, you know, the channels that you're on is you have the ability to, I think, influence people at like a very deep level as opposed to, you know, kind of shows that are on fleeting for a time here and there. But people kind of grow up and come up with you, you know, and now you're seeing that. So that's got to make you feel pretty good, doesn't it?
You know, it does. And I don't know if you've watched any of our television shows, but it airs in 35 states, about 140 different markets within those 35 states. It's going to grow by another 40 markets coming up in about 8 months or so. We got some new lead different stations, but we got Fast Freddy on the keyboards. So Fast Freddy plays a little ragtime music, little music. He takes us in and out of the segments. We do the cooking routine. He's like the little side dish, throw something in here and there. We make fun of Freddy and we make fun of each other. And I get mad at Meryl. I get mad at Freddy. And then the whole world's okay after that. So people enjoy that little realm of 30 minutes where they can lose reality.
Yeah.
And we all lose reality.
We do it. You know, another big thing on a TV show is, number one, we don't rehearse. And it's off the cuff.
One take. Yeah.
That's it.
There's not like you comedians. Get up there and you can stumble through a whole show and then redo it again.
No, it's great. It's rinse and repeat. You know, that's why I got into this business. Less work.
Yeah.
Less work for the same deal. Do you have improv backgrounds?
I do.
Where did you study?
Actually, in St. Louis, back in the early 70s.
Oh, wow. That was like the beginning of improv's like
heyday. It really was. I mean, you realize, you know, you had your second city. You know, you had me out in California, and we had done that for 2 years, and it was fun. It really, really was. There was nobody else, you know, really doing any improv at that time.
But we get up there's several times a year that we get up on stage, you know, big deal, and you do this little 30-minute improv, and we're hired as entertainers at home and garden shows, sports shows, RV and camping right. shows around the country, and you know, it's a neat little improv, and every time you get up there, you give it every, you know, the routine, you give it every bit of energy you got, and you know the routine, but it's every show is always different, so it's yeah. improv.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just all part of the business.
Yeah, you have your general structure, and then do you find that, like, they're you ask the audience a question, there are certain responses that you know you're going to get, you know? So you have, like...
Sure, exactly.
I've got a part in my show where it's that, too, but it's kind of, like, same but different, but you start to learn a lot about, I think, people just in doing that, those improv things, generally speaking.
Well, we talk about macho men because, you know, they got the grill all fired up, they're burning everything, everything's charred down yeah. thing, you know, and get rid of the machoism type yeah. of thing. We talk about ladies in the outdoor grilling market and stuff like that, which is amazing nowadays with all the technology. You know, when we started, it was a 50-50 split, gas versus charcoal. The gas grill industry took off. Outdoor grillers have gas grills. What's really great now, Charlie, is for our market is we have job security. People are entertaining more and more at home. You have those Komodo style grills, you know, like the Asians have been cooking on the inch and a half of ceramic. I won't name any name brands. You got those beautiful pellet grills. And it's amazing the number of people this year that we talked to that increased pellet grills. Yeah. I bet you everybody we talked to, 50% have pellet grills now. It's just an amazing thing.
It's just, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, we
that's
get all amazing. Giddy. We get giddy.
So what? I feel like I have to ask you this. I'd be remiss if I didn't. What is the best way to grill abroad properly? There's a lot of...
it's really interesting. It was just on the radio 2 days ago. I got a call off. Hey, we're talking about bratwurst. What's the best way? Everybody has their own theory. Our theory is like we like browning the brats first and then putting them in a beer brine.
Okay.
And then obviously, we got beer. We got some butter. You got some onions in there, you know, and you got some peppers. And then you let some...
You know, and then, of course, over in Sheboygan, you know, you got to put a double brother on a damn bun. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to double brother. I mean, what? Is that just Sheboygan? I thought that was just the rule, generally speaking, you know.
That's just that one little area. Three people.
Well, yeah, you guys get to travel. You get to travel around so much. Like, what is what's one of the most unique places you've been to in the Midwest from a food perspective? Like, you're not going to see this anywhere else.
Oh, boy, that's a really good question.
Well, first of all, we call it the manure tour.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. Yeah? Why do you do that?
Yeah. Because it happens.
You know, St. Louis, mm-hmm. pork steak is unbelievable. When they're tailgating, yeah, they have their brats, but pork steak is a big thing. And there's so many different ways to do pork steak, but go to St. Louis, they want to pork steak.
And what is different than that, than a regular steak for your newbies?
Well, your pork steak, obviously, pork is a lot more economical to buy, for one thing. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit more fat into it. There's different ways to do it. Other people will just go ahead and grill it like what a normal steak. Some will go ahead and grill it and put it in a pan and put a can of beer and then a bottle of barbecue sauce, let it simmer, you know, all the time for it. It's just unique. It's got a really good flavor to it. I love pork steak.
Yeah.
It's good. It's pork steak. You know, people say, "Oh, give me a brat." St. Louis, give me a pork steak.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good to know those localities and like what to get when you're going there. You don't go to Milwaukee or Sheboygan, let's say, and get a pork steak, but you're getting a brat.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Are there other foods like that you think people should definitely try out?
Well, there's all kinds of them. You know, our motto is there's nothing, you know, anything you put in the oven, you can put on the grill. Anything you can cook, you can put on the grill type of situation. So in the 40 years, the television show, Midwest Grilling, Mad Dog and Merrill's Midwest Grilling, you know, we do so many different recipes. We do a lot of cedar plank cooking, which people are that.
Yeah.
And plank cooking is phenomenal. And I've done recipes, probably 1,000 different recipes on cedar plank cooking. And the reason you do it is because, like, when you're on the road, you want something foolproof. So when we travel to, like, this year we were in, what was the name of the city in North Dakota?
Oh, North Dakota?
Watford City. If you're listening, Watford City, we loved you folks out there. There's a rib cook-off, and we grilled there. But you bring cedar planks with you because it's foolproof, and everything turns out. This year, we got to go down to West Allis to the nice little meat company down there, Beecher Meats.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
And, yeah, that's and, a good spot.
Did $140 a pound Kobe beef, actually certified Japanese Kobe beef. I was nervous as hell for 3 days when he took it. And then because I never cooked Kobe beef and I couldn't imagine cooking $140 a pound, then I thought to myself, well, it's probably only going to be 12 ounces. You know, so it's probably only $80 or something. It ain't so bad. But it turned out beautifully, but we reverse seared it. We did something, that's a fad now. You reverse sear. You bring it to a certain temperature off the side of the heat where there's no direct heat. Yeah. Bring it to a certain temperature about 15 degrees before where you want it, really. And then you sear it to that certain temperature that you want it at, the 145 or whatever you want to take a steak off at. So you got to catch it at the right moment. You know, years ago when we started, there was no meat thermometers in our.
We had the old
round tailors or those ones that say pork is done at 185 degrees. You know, we tell people now the number one thing you want to do, cut some meat, are getting leaner and leaner. You got to treat them with tender, loving care. The prices go up. So we tell them to get meat thermometers. We tell them to oil the meat products. We tell them to do injectables. We talk about brines. We talk about all kinds of the whole gamut to help people out when they do it. But we do it in there.
Yeah. And I think our fair Midwest grillings, we're doing a lot of Midwest cooking. Number one, we use a lot of sauerkraut. We use a lot of potatoes.
Ring kielbasa.
Yeah, ring kielbasa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Midwest. That's the heart. Back to the pork steak and things.
And it's all, and it's one of the reasons that we're here today, too. You know, it's all meat and potatoes, and we like talking about Wisconsin potatoes. Some of the sponsors, sponsors.
Yeah,
you got
yeah.
some there. You got Quick Trip and Jolly Good and a few other good ones out there. You know, our sponsors, one of our sponsors, Wisconsin Potato Growers. And they're just great. We just did a television taping for them last week, and that show airs on the 24th. And it happens to be the same week as National Potato Week, which is the 27th of October.
Yeah. Oh, put that on the calendar.
And in the realm of things, I'm going to say one thing commercialized. You can go to maddogandmerrill.com and learn in their area where our show does air for them. And it is a fun little show, and they can also download it, the app on Roku or Amazon Fire. And it's a fun show. It really is. You can lose reality for a half hour, and it's kind of fun. And if you download all those, you can lose reality for like 5 hours.
Which a lot of people are looking to do these days.
This is the fifth day that I've been in down reality of watching this
show. If you bring up potatoes, there's a lot of ways to do them right, but there's a lot of ways to do them wrong. So what are the pitfalls people fall into when trying to do potatoes?
I think the number one thing people try to do with potatoes is and I brought some examples.
Oh, Charlie. Did you look at this?
This russet was in a field. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Wasaki farm. They got Charlie. They got the acre harvests 70,000 pounds of potatoes. Every acre harvests 70,000 pounds of potatoes. They got 8,000 acres themselves.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of potatoes.
Seriously, that's like almost 700 million pounds of potatoes. So the problem, here's the thing. I'm going to introduce you to the family. They don't try diversity, and diversity is good in life. We all know that.
Yeah. Yep. So
beautiful russet, the beautiful gold, when you cut into that baby, they call them yellows in Wisconsin. It's just pure moisture and pure gold. It's phenomenal. The flavor, the texture, the carbs are different. Mm. The sugars are different. Yeah, and we all know the baby reds are sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
The baby reds are good. And this is a crazy thing here. I had a couple nights ago. I cooked for Lori and I. There's yellow ones. There's purple ones. And there's reds. And these are called fingerlings.
Ah. And
they're most buttery, rich. I've never had a fingerling before. And I can honestly say that. And I apologize to Wisconsin Potato Growers. If you don't try the fingerlings, it's like cream. It's like biting into cream. It's the most phenomenal thing in the world. It really is. So the problem with doing potatoes, as with anything else, is diversity. Experiment and have fun, and that's why we're Mad Dog and Merrill.
Now, if you're saying go ahead. I jumped on you.
I'm going to cry. I just
I just read, though, today. I can read. I can't believe this. I don't know if I could try this. Mashed potatoes with molasses.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's what I said.
I'd rather have a nice little Pilsner.
I would too. But I can't believe that. It shows people trying it. You have to check it out. Look on YouTube. I mean, I can't.
Well, I like how, as experienced as you are in this, you're still learning stuff new all the time.
Well, it is. I mean, that's the whole part of grillology, which is
really I just took this potato right here, which is, we know, is what then, Charlie?
Oh, that's one of them nice, big, beautiful potatoes. It looks kind of like, you have to hold it the right way, because you hold it the wrong way, it looks like something we can't say on air here. But that,
it
looks like a scholar potato. You got the head up there, you got the arms right here. Are you seeing this? Yeah.
Can you understand what you're saying, though, Charlie? You're absolutely correct, because the potato, after it's dug, is a organism. It's still living. And you know why it's still living is because that baby right there, it sprouts the little eyes, the little sprouts.
Yep.
So it's still living. And then you cut that, and that's how you plant potatoes. It goes back to the pirates. The pirate said to one pirate, said to the other, he says, "Should we plant that sprout?" And the pirate says, "Aye, matey, there she grows."
Ladies and gentlemen, where are the applause? Where are the applause? That was
why
wonderful.
Wasn't there any applause for some reason?
I was applauding right now as we're talking,
and today a billion people eat potatoes.
So
it's the third largest cash crop, because the cereals are first, the wheat, the corn, and something else are first. But the potato comes next. It's amazing.
If someone's got a cookout, a barbecue, what is the go-to? What would you say? Try it this way. Your recommended way of doing it. How would you go about it?
Well, one of my favorites that I like is we'll do Parmesan potatoes. You cut them about halfway through, then you quarter them, and then you marinate them in a little bit of Italian dressing and play Parmesan cheese on there to place it on the grill. Oh, man, you get a big tub of sour cream and a case of beer, and you sit there and you take those potatoes and you just dip them in that sour cream.
And can I turn my phone off to be polite, but I could show you pictures from last night's meal. Beautiful boneless, skinless chicken thighs and Yukon Gold wedges.
Gotcha.
And done the same way. You take Yukon Gold, because you can eat the peelings on these two babies. We eat the peelings on all of them, by the way, because it's just when you grill them, it's kind of like squash. We can grill squash and you can eat the rind on it. It just comes out beautifully. But when you take these wedges, I took these wedges and did just like Meryl said, I got pictures on my phone.
Oh, do you really?
Ah, they're gorgeous. Oh, beautiful ones. Yeah.
But loaded potatoes, a loaded baked potato. You know, you cook that potato until it's nice and done. If you're ever going to use a thermometer or anything, they're done like at 205. We don't need that. You want to know when you can start feeling where they're soft, but split that over, you know, and you put some sour cream in there.
Oh yeah, that's real good.
Some crunkle bacon on there.
So I took that. I took this. This is our russet. We took this russet and I cut it in half lengthwise. And I take each half and I take a knife and I cut a pocket out of it. So I take the flesh out of the meat, out of the potato, and I have a pocket. And then I'll brown those up on the grill after I oil them a little bit. And I'll turn that pocket side up. We took apples, pie apples,
yeah,
and I diced them up. We added oats. We added brown sugar, white sugar, melted butter and flour and cinnamon and nutmeg. And we made an apple crisp. And then we packed it inside that little hot pocket of potato that was already done. We put it off on the side of the grill, indirect method of cooking, for about 30 more minutes for that pie to bake. And that pie, the crust was salt-free, sodium-free, cholesterol-free, and gluten-free, because the pie crust was the potato.
Oh, wow. I see. That's a thing that a lot of people forget about, is they got a lot of those health benefits, especially in the skin, too. The skin's where a lot of it's at, isn't it?
Yeah. The skin's where it's at. The flesh is where it's at. It's more potassium than a banana, and potassium is heart healthy, and also for your kidneys, so it lowers your blood pressure. It's got calcium in there. It's got iron in there, so it brings oxygen to your system. It's just the most phenomenal thing in the world. It really is. And I'm doing a low carb, and the only thing I allow myself to eat in the evening is meat and potatoes. We eat potatoes at night, even though I'm doing low carb. I've lost 12 more pounds here in about 20 days or something like that.
Well, I gained another 12 pounds.
Meryl.
the two of you have to weigh the same amount at all times.
You gotta balance.
But you can go to eatwisconsinpotatoes.com. They got a neat little chart on there, Charlie, with all the different types of potatoes and what they're recommended for. Like the fingerlings, you wouldn't want to mash them little babies. That'd be like insulting. Because they're more of a connoisseur. We do all kinds. I'll take a nice potato and we'll char the Evelyn Dickens out of it until it's tender. And then we put it in a hot bowl, and you take sour cream and butter and regular cream and garlic and horseradish, and you mash potatoes, and then that charred little peelings on the outside are all in with the mashed potatoes, and there's nothing in the world like it.
They're delicious. Yep. They're delicious.
It's better than being at a rod and gun club on a Tuesday.
With antlers. I got antlers.
Nice rack.
Thank you. Before I go, this has been a lot of fun, but I want to ask you guys, what do you recommend for people who kind of want to do what you do? How do you recommend they get to where you're at?
You never do.
When we started, they were probably doing what we were doing. You know, we were the first ones offered for the Food Channel, but we were too radical for them.
Oh, 40? Really?
There's going to be a show of Mad Dog and Meryl, but we were too radical. Oh, now look at it. You know? White hair and go around in a convertible.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I mean, we didn't have any competition and we stuck with it. I think that we have a lot of friends of ours that are a lot of chefs and everything.
We go back to the old vaudeville, really. You know, and there'll never be another Mad Dog in Maryland. There'll never be another Charlie, of course, either.
Yeah.
And or Manitowoc Minute or anything like that, because you are it. But we go back to vaudeville age, you know, type of thing when we started. Our comedy is so slapstick. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. You know, it's cheesy. Yeah. The show's cheesy.
Oh, I love cheesy. We actually, speaking of potatoes, when we travel, we go as Starchy and Hutch.
Yeah, you guys got it. I can taste the cheese on that joke. It's so good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, Lindberger.
So what do you, I mean, if people are looking to like get into it, what do you recommend they do? Do you recommend they just start cooking? There's so many avenues, YouTube, all that sort of stuff.
Today. There's a lot of different schools, you know, college and stuff, but I think you got to really learn from hard knocks.
Yeah. But nowadays, when we started, we didn't have podcasts. We didn't have Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we didn't have all those avenues. So people are doing it right now. They're already started. They're way ahead of us, and they don't even know it.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I'm saying? You're ahead of us. Snotty-ass little...
That's true. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And so seriously, everybody's ahead of us, but we don't care. You know why? Because we are who we are.
Yeah. We're old.
We don't care. Our days are done and numbered. But not the television show. Let me tell you that.
The wave, you know, it's fun. Everybody goes, when are you going to retire? Well, we're not going to retire.
It's like a farmer. You just kind of fall over.
We like what we're doing. Why would you want to retire if you're doing what you like?
I feel like what you're doing is what most people want to do in their retirement. So I think you're doing something very right.
You know, what are you guys doing in retirement? Well, this is what I would do. You know, I'm doing it. I am retired. You know?
That's so awesome.
It's, people getting into it. I mean, now, you know, you got your YouTube and everything else. We never had that. You know, I remember when we were on, I mean, there was not that much cable at all.
So I understand you and our good friend, is it Alex, coming up next?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn a lot about potatoes there, and you're going to learn about how they are good stewards of the land.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of neat, and we do appreciate that. We preach wherever we go, make sure that you buy local, support local, and that's what it's all about, so...
Well, really appreciate that, especially with Wisconsin potatoes, you know, lower carbon footprint if you're getting stuff that's made in your state or grown in your state.
So number one producer in the world country-wise is China. Well, can you imagine if we didn't have Wisconsin potato growers, we'd be getting our potatoes from China, and what a sad situation that would be, all the carbon footprints and everything else, and all the fuel and all the energy wasted.
Yeah.
God love Idaho, you know, Idaho's number one producer, Washington second, Wisconsin is third. Oregon's fourth, but all in the same world. If we don't produce our stuff, we found that out during the COVID. If we can't produce what we need, we're in deep trouble.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think people don't often think about that. But yeah, that all that transportation it gets to get something to a place is costly for all of us from an environmental perspective. So to lower it is.
So were you able to ride in the machinery to pick potatoes?
Oh yeah, I was.
Wasn't that great?
It was really cool. I could only go a little bit because probably insurance reasons, but I mean,
well, proprietary. They didn't want to show you how they dug potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was a lot of fun though.
70,000 pounds of potatoes per acre, 8,000 acres.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and it's feeding everyone their chips and baked potatoes and frites and the little finger situation.
Fingerless.
Yeah. Yep. I could go on. And the fries, I like cutting them thin and then deep frying them and making those fries. Those are nice.
You know? And here, Wisconsin produces a lot of white potatoes. We don't get them to eat ourselves, but those go to the chip companies.
Oh, yeah.
And there's varieties of white potatoes, moisture content that potato chip people want. It's a science we'll never understand, Charlie. We won't understand it.
But we're equal opportunity consumers of all of it. So there you have it.
So I know our time is up, and we do appreciate the time with you, Charlie. And if ever you need two grillologists with so much knowledge in any subject, call upon us, and we'll be glad to do it. But until then, eatwisconsinpotatoes.com and watch Mad Dog and Merrill's Midwest Grilling, if you would, please.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Charlie. It's great talking to you.
All right. Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, folks, excuse the interruption, but I want to thank our sponsors for this podcast. As I says at the intro, Jolly Good Soda, the title sponsor here. Great soda made right here in Wisconsin. And I also want to thank Duluth Trading Company for the most comfortable undies this side of the Mississippi. Check out Duluth Trading Company. You can scoop up them undies, and also work pants, work shirts, dress shirts. They're honestly the same as work shirts in my category. And winter gear. They got their Alaskan hard gear. I got an Alaskan hard gear. Nice, like, winter coat and jeepers, criminy. It's warm in there because it's cold out there. That could be their new tagline. Anywho, Duluth Trading Company. Check them out real quick once. And finally, folks, if you are looking for gifts for the holidays, you can go to mandwalkman.com or cripescast.com, and you can order Midwest merch, stuff that says "ope" and "keep her moving" and "watch out for deer." And you can get the Midwest Survival Guide there. We've got our album Unthawed up there. A bunch of stuff. Also koozies and bottle openers and whatnot. Check it out. Cripescast.com, mandwalkminute.com. Okie dokes, back to the podcast. What does work look like today? Give people a sense of what the potato business looks like in early October in Wisconsin.
So early October, we're just finishing up all of our harvesting. Today, unfortunately, we had a little bit of rain this morning, so that kind of put a pause on things, but we're just cleaning up some of the last fields we didn't get to yet in harvest, and hopefully we'll be done in the next few days or so.
Now, a lot of people, when they think about Wisconsin, potatoes isn't the first thing that comes to mind. They'll think of dairy, you know, predominantly, obviously, being the dairy mm-hmm. state, maybe soybeans, mm-hmm. maybe corn, some cranberries, but potatoes kind of like that sleeper a little bit. But Wisconsin is the third largest producer of potatoes in the U.S. Is that correct?
That is. We kind of go back and forth between third and fourth, but we're consistently top five producer in the U.S.
What is unique about the land here that makes it an advantageous place to grow potatoes?
So we've got the Central Sands here in Wisconsin, which is great for growing crops, and we've got a nice aquifer as well. So we've got the land, we've got the water. For potatoes, we get kind of a perfect growing season in terms of length of warmth and temperatures. It's a great spot just to grow any kind of crop, really.
Now, of course, they're not native to Wisconsin. Give people a sense. You know, a lot of people think potato, Irish potato famine, Ireland, but they don't come from Europe, do they?
Our potatoes that we're growing?
Yeah.
So we're growing, we do grow a lot of seed potatoes here in Wisconsin that we reuse every year to grow crops, potatoes making to the fresh market, but we'll also buy seed from around the country, Colorado, North Dakota, areas like that.
What is the farming community or the growing community like for potatoes in Wisconsin? Is it a small family? Do you all know each other, or is it bigger than that?
Yeah, I think pretty much every potato farm is a family owned business, and they're in well past their first and second generation. So it's a lot of our ancestors that came here and started growing years and years ago. And some of the families have grown and got bigger. Some farms have maybe teamed up with other farms, but it's all family driven.
Mm-hmm. And what are the big challenges to growing potatoes in Wisconsin as opposed to, say, Idaho or Washington?
Yeah, you know, we've got, things can get a little bit tight on both ends of the growing season for us. If we get kind of a late spring, if we get a late start to planting, that can be a little tricky. And then on the other end in the fall, if we get kind of early frost, cold temperatures that can hurt us a little bit too. But like I said, that window for growing is pretty good every year in Wisconsin.
Also the soil, I mean, you mentioned it before, but what is it about, what kind of soil do you need and what kind does Wisconsin have that makes it ideal?
So most of Wisconsin, the central stands, we've got that sandy soil. You know, it's got really good, there's great nutrients in the soil. It does a good job with managing kind of water. When we get heavy rains, it for most of the part, it drains pretty well throughout the state. And then that leads to our aquifer that we've got that we can use for watering our crops when we need to as well.
Mm-hmm. And there are obviously, when you grow anything, when you do any kind of farming, there are challenges environmentally that you have to work through. You know, potatoes, obviously the big one is nitrates and all that sort of stuff. And mm-hmm. I know that you've been doing a lot of work. I don't know if you specifically, but I believe you guys have been working with the UW system to develop better, improving the growing process. So what does that look like?
Mm-hmm. So they have a research station in Hancock, Wisconsin, and they do, or the WPVGA, Wisconsin Potato Vegetable Growers Association, they fund them every year to do all kinds of research on how we can improve growing techniques. So putting nitrogen on the potatoes, how much we put on, how often we apply, certain times of the day that we apply, as well as working with different varieties of potatoes, some that maybe won't need quite as much nitrogen. We do put nitrogen on our potatoes. It is necessary, but we're doing an awful lot of work to try and make sure that we can use only the amount that we need to use, nothing extra, just so we can avoid some of those nitrates in the groundwater.
Mm-hmm. And the tough part probably is you do it, but you can't always predict the weather, right? So if it rains hard right after that, that's kind of is that the biggest challenge from an environmental perspective?
That is a big challenge. If we apply it and then a rain hits right away, that'll wash it right through. Mm-hmm. So that's an issue. But like you said, we can plan as much as we want, but sometimes it's out of our control.
Yeah. Is there a technology you see on the horizon that you're excited about that I don't know how much you are into that technical aspect of it, but is there a technology on the horizon that you're working and developing right now, or is it simply selecting the right variety of potato for this area?
Yeah, a specific technology doesn't come to mind, but I'm sure they're working on there's crazy technology involved in farming. But really for the time being, for the next few years, it's just watching the research that's being done at that Hancock research station, seeing what they come up with in terms of, hey, try and do this a little bit differently. Maybe use this variety instead of this one.
Mm-hmm. What do you love about the culture of growing potatoes? I mean, your family has been in the business for a long time. What is it that keeps you coming back to the business?
Well, I really enjoy knowing that the work that we're doing is putting food on the table for families across not just Wisconsin, but across the country. That's very rewarding to know that we're helping feed families. But the other part about Wisconsin potato growers that really surprised me when I joined the company was how much everybody in the state works together. You know, they all seem to understand that we need to promote Wisconsin as a potato grower, not just their own individual farms. So everybody's very willing to work with each other, help each other when we need to. And that's been, it's been great to work in an industry like that.
That farming mentality too of, you know, I've talked to a number of other farmers, dairy farmers, cranberry growers on this, but there's always that mentality of, hey, you're having a tough go or whatever, we come help you out. Mm-hmm. Is that the vibe you guys have as well?
Yeah, everybody runs into the same issues at one point, and we're always willing to help each other out, give each other a hand when they're dealing with something that's difficult.
Yeah. What's your go-to potato recipe?
Go-to? Well, I love twice bakes. Those are always great. And I enjoy red potatoes, kind of cutting those up and throwing them on the grill, maybe with some mushrooms or onions. That's always really good.
Yeah. Yeah. What's... do you ever slice them thin for a fish fry and then toss them in the deep fryer? You ever do that?
Yeah, I've done it. Yes, absolutely.
That's always good. I always mess it up. I got like too much oil on there, so I just have the worst heartburn after I do one of
I'm sure it tastes good though.
It tastes so good. But you know, you got to let the oil drain a little bit. That's what I've realized. My dad just lays them on thick though, like right out of the deep fryer onto your plate. So I'm blaming my dad for that. You know,
that's fine.
Yeah. What is the history of your family in Wisconsin? When did everything start?
So my family's company started in 1905. It would have been my great grandfather and his brother that started the company. And it's just, like I said, it's just grown from there. I would be fourth generation, working with my father who was still working, and my cousin is there as well.
And do you know what their story was, why they chose potatoes of all the other crops they could have chosen? Why'd they go with potatoes?
So I believe he chose potatoes because they were selling well at the time. I believe he saw other areas or other people in the areas growing potatoes and saw a market for it. I think the majority of what he grew and sold went to the Chicago area. He was sending it down there on trains, boxcars. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of very slowly grown from there. We've purchased more land, family's grown. And here we are today.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you hope to see the business go from here?
You know, really just kind of continue the great work that's been done. I hope that we can continue to integrate some of the new technology in our company, continue to find more ways to take care of the land that we're using, make sure that we're being as eco-friendly as possible. And just do as much as we can to promote Wisconsin potatoes.
That's
what we want.
Definitely. You know, when you say, working with the land, what are the practices like now after you harvest? How do you prep the land or protect it for the next growing season? Do you rotate fields or what's your tactic there?
Yep. So we're on a 3 to 4 year rotation cycle for our crops. Once we're done harvesting, we always plant a cover crop. It's usually just rye, oats, something like that. That'll stay throughout the whole winter. That helps prevent, it helps prevent the field going, erosion, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But then we can till that back in the spring and it gives nutrients to the land as well.
Yeah.
Also, we plant windbreaks as much as we can around the fields, kind of help maintain, or I should say, control what's going in the field, stays in the field, kind of give it a little bit of a border.
So you're talking trees typically, or what are those?
Yeah,
breaks?
Trees just run along the edges of the fields, are windrows, they're called. Mm-hmm. Or windrows. Yeah, windrows.
Got it. Do you have sort of a party that you do, or not a like do you guys all come together at any point and like all the various potato growing families and get together and obviously drink, eat potatoes, and do you talk shop? Are there any like what is the inside scoop of a farmer, a potato grower's life look like?
So there's definitely times of the year where we like to have fun with it. Every February we have a potato expo where we will all the growers will meet. It's usually held in Stevens Point, kind of a central area of the state, but we will listen to the researchers at UW-Madison, find out kind of what they've been doing, what they've found out so far. And there's always a banquet that goes with that. It's a great opportunity for everybody to just get together. We do it in February when usually people aren't that busy. And then during the summer, we'll have a couple golf outings around the state. Just again, a great way to meet with everybody and have a little bit of fun throughout the year.
Yeah. And do you have, is there an aspect of the business that's like your favorite? Like, did you grow up learning every element of the game?
So I actually did not. I didn't really spend a whole lot of time with the farm when I was growing up. I didn't start working there until I was in college. But once I got in, I quickly learned how unique of an industry it is. And that's why ultimately I decided to start working here when I graduated.
So as a fourth generation potato grower, I mean, you grow up, this is in your family, right? You go off to school. I mean, were you always going to do this, or were you looking at other things and then you decide, no, this is what I'm going to spend my life doing?
Yeah, I was never pushed into this. I just went to school and studied business. I thought that was something I could use in a lot of different places. I had not made up my mind. I wasn't dead set on going into farming. It was just as I went through school and started to work on the farm a little bit and learned about what a unique opportunity it was for me, that's when I decided to join up.
And what are the big hurdles that you see in the potato business right now?
Well, one big hurdle is finding employees. I don't think that's unique to farming. I think a lot of businesses around the state are struggling with that right now. But the other big hurdle that I think our industry is facing is kind of what you alluded to. People don't really associate Wisconsin with potatoes. We're not really known to be a potato state, even though we are, like I said, always in the top five. So it's just promoting Wisconsin potatoes and also making sure the public understands how much work our farms do to kind of take care of the environment that we're farming. I think there's a lot more that goes on that people understand. Farmers just, they really want to take care of the land and take care of our natural resources as well as farming the land.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's a tough thing. Cause had a variety of farmers on the podcast before. Each set of farming comes with these, you know, things that you have to do in order to make it economically feasible to grow potatoes in your case, but it's not a perfect thing. And it's not, is your goal in it to just get it as good as possible and always pushing, always seeing what the new technologies are? What kind of things do you guys actively do to make sure you're doing the best thing for the environment?
Yeah, we're always watching that stuff. Whenever we can try to do something that could use, you know, find a ways to use less water, less chemicals, we're always going to do it. But you made a good point as well. You know, we still have to make money. We still have to produce a crop. So it's kind of balancing those two mindsets, but definitely always keeping an eye on what we can do to be better stewards of the land.
Mm-hmm. Is there something you wish that this could be like fixed and that would help a lot of this? I'm just saying it could be big ideas. Like it may be impossible right now, you know, but maybe somebody hears it and they're thinking, oh, I know maybe this could work. You know, is there a problem that you wish you could really just get a hold on that the technology does not yet exist to solve?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of technology that does exist, but seems to be improving at a rapid pace. So we haven't really implemented it yet. We're kind of watching to see where it goes. But there's, you know, a perfect example would be we hire people to scout all of our potato fields and they're looking for pests and disease. And once they see it in the field, then we decide, okay, we got to go ahead and spray the field to take care of this. They've got the technology now where we can take drones and fly over these fields and find the very specific points in the field that are being affected by this disease. And then you can apply the chemicals just to that portion of the field rather than kind of across the whole thing. You know, with drones, they're able to map out the entire field, whereas the scouts are just taking portions of it. So there's a lot of really cool technology, but it's changing so fast that we're kind of just watching to see where it goes before we start to really implement all of it.
So you want to, in other words, make sure that it is effective before you, invest in it.
Effective. It's feasible as well, just because it's brand new. It's quite expensive. So we need to make sure that the return we get on those kinds of investments is there before we just jump right in.
I see. So does the government have any programs that invests in those technologies? So the burden of, you know, everybody eats potatoes. And so, right. I mean, everybody is kind of a part of this. It's not just those who grow the potatoes, but are there any programs that the government has in place where it's like, hey, we know this technology will be beneficial to the environment, beneficial to the grower. We know not everybody has the cash. Are there any programs like that?
It's a very good idea. I haven't done a whole lot of research into that. I sure hope that they do. But yeah, like you said, it's something that would be a good use of money if people had the money to buy all this technology. Mm-hmm. But I'll certainly have to do a little more research to see if there's any government programs that can help companies afford that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because I feel like from a political standpoint, there's no politician that's, you know, most politicians try and a lot of them just give lip service to farmers because they think that's how they're going to get the rural vote or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But, you know, finding those active, or I guess, you know, you being so in the business, just kind of saying like, hey, if we had this or that, you know, that would be really beneficial. I mean, maybe there's a politician that would take that on and get those, get that funding for that.
And that's certainly a focus point of the Wisconsin Potato and Vegetable Growers. We also spend a lot of money on government affairs, lobbying in Congress, just to make sure that our lawmakers understand what's going on in the farming industry so that they can make better decisions.
Yeah, because I know that there's a lot of, you know, I think the problematic thing is when the lobbying goes to making restrictions, making them less restrictive, I guess. I feel like in an ideal world, the lobbying would go to making like that technology that you would need to make the environment better. The lobbying would go to like pushing those technologies. Would you agree with that mindset?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is going to be making sure politicians understand that Wisconsin farmers want to be more environmentally friendly, want to do everything that they can to take care of the environment. And it's lifting, I don't want to say lifting restrictions, but making decisions that will allow farmers to take care of it themselves.
Mm-hmm. I totally get that. And I think, again, so kind of like focusing those energies on like those drones, those are expensive. Like maybe, mm-hmm. you know, focusing those efforts on, hey, how can we get like subsidies for these drones or whatever they are? I don't know if that's the expensive technology you're referring to, but just ways of getting it there and giving you access to those, that would seem to make the most sense to me.
That's part of it. A good example would be we had issues with high capacity wells in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to push lawmakers to allow farms to put in more high capacity wells, not because we want to use more water, but because we want to put in wells that are going to be much more efficient.
Mm.
So on the surface, you know, it's kind of scary. It's like farmers want to dig more wells, want to put in more high cap wells. But really what we're trying to do is put in better wells that could replace other ones, allowing us to be more efficient with our water usage.
Mm-hmm. And so is that a framing issue? Like, do people see you want to dig more wells, you're taking more water? Is that sort of So it's mm-hmm. kind of getting that, you know, getting to the heart of why you want to do it. What is the problem with digging more wells, or what's the pushback to it?
Well, the pushback is just that it's that they don't want farmers to just be able to dig wells wherever they want to, because the fear is that we're going to use up all of the water, all of the groundwater, just to grow our crops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not true. You know, we try to be as efficient as possible when it comes to farming and using water. We want to be able to replace wells that have leaks in them, or wells that are not doing a good job with pumping water. There's just so many benefits that would come into putting in a new well. And so that's what we've pushed for. But people just assume that means we want to pump more water than we already are, which is not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really is, especially Wisconsin the past few years has had increased rainfall, if I'm not mistaken. But
we have, yeah.
But obviously then when we do get that increased rainfall, I would assume that, I guess I don't know for sure, but that would help retain it while we do have more rainfall, correct?
Yeah, we've found through a lot of research that rainfall and weather is the primary factor in determining the groundwater level.
Mm-hmm.
Farming doesn't actually have that big of an impact on it. And the aquifer, the ground level right now is quite high just because of all the heavy rains we've had the last few years.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, and then, of course, everyone's trying to plan for 20 years when maybe there's not as much rainfall. Climate change is been going on for a while, and mm-hmm. we don't always know what the climate's going to be in 10 years from now. So planning that ahead. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for sharing all that. Now, if someone is looking to get into your line of work, it sounds like you have job opportunities open to that. What do you recommend they would do if they're interested?
Well, I would recommend that they contact the WPVGA and, you know, ask them to reach out to growers in their area to see if they're looking for work. I don't want to promote our farm specifically, but if you're, you know, if you're anywhere in central Wisconsin, there's a lot of potato farms that would be, I'm sure, willing to hire very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And for the consumer who, you know, going back to the environmental thing, getting potatoes in Wisconsin, lower carbon footprint, how do you recommend when they're just at the store, how can you tell if it's Wisconsin potatoes? What should mm-hmm. they look out for?
So most of the bags will say grown in Wisconsin on them. Some of the quick lock tags have a big red Wisconsin printed right on it. So, you know, it would just be, you know, we're just hoping that we can get consumers to take a few seconds when they're buying potatoes to just look at the bags they're buying and say, oh yeah, these are grown in Wisconsin.
Anything I didn't ask that you wish we went into here?
Nothing comes to mind. Happy to chat with you.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. I appreciate everything you brought to it. So thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll send you the link when it's up and all that sort of stuff too.
Sure, sure. Okay. Sounds great.
All right, cool. Well, you have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
All right, take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
And that's it for this week's episode of the Cripes Cast, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you check out Mad Dog and Merrill. You can check your local listings for that. And also, if you want to support local Wisconsin agriculture, buy local, buy Wisconsin potatoes for your potato pancakes, for your next fish fry. Okie dokes, that's it for me. Everybody keep her moving and watch out for deer and tell your folks I says hi. All righty, bye-bye.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No. Gotta keep her moving.